Hi everyone, my name is Andra Stanoyou and you're listening to the Healthy Debate Show here on UK Health Radio and Podcast. On February the 6th, 2023, a powerful 7.8 magnitude earthquake and a series of strong tremors and aftershocks devastated southeast Turkey and northwest Syria. The death toll has passed 47,000 and continues to rise. What is the psychological effect on survivors and what is the aftermath after this traumatic event? We will find out today more about trauma and the aftermath of trauma from Dr. Belinder Walia, psychotherapist and anxiety expert and the founder of Serene Lifestyles, an online therapy practice. Welcome back, Dr. Belinder. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Andra, and thank you for having me on your show.
Well, thank you for wanting to be part of this this episode, because today's topic is sad, isn't it? It's sad and it's profound, and I'm very pleased that you made time to address such an important matter as, you know, the earthquake and traumas and how do people manage trauma. So before we start discussing about this this awful event and traumatic event, let's talk a bit about your practice, your work. What do you specialize in, and what's the passion about working with people? What's behind that?
Although it's a disturbing topic we're discussing today, Andra, I think it's a very important one, and I appreciate the introduction you already gave me. But as you said, I am a psychotherapist and anxiety expert, but I'm committed to helping people improve their mental and emotional well-being. And my focus is on helping people build confidence and self-esteem to feel amazing both in their professional and personal relationships, especially the relationship they have with themselves.
So did you have in your previous practice any clients that have had to deal with this type of traumatic events, or mostly, you know, other types of trauma?
Lots of different types of trauma, and the thing is, trauma is defined differently for each individual. But if we talk about natural disasters or a disaster, I recall many years ago, I did speak to a client, I think when the disaster of the tsunami in the Indian Ocean happened back in 2004. And I remember speaking to this client about 2012. And she was talking about how it impacted her and how she couldn't let it go. She had bouts of depression and she felt fearful and anxiety. There was no sleeping pattern that was normal for her. So in that sense, she comes to mind. She does come to mind now that you mention it.
Dr. Belinder, looking at the disaster that happened in Turkey recently, what would you say are the main concerns if we are to analyze the psychological effects of this earthquake on the survivors, and why not on the people that have been on the ground supporting? Because that's a topic in itself, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. But the main concerns when analyzing the psychological effects of the earthquake in Turkey are the potential for long-term mental health issues and the challenges of providing the support. So, especially in a disaster-stricken region, traumatic events such as natural disasters can lead to a range of mental health issues. And as I said, including depression and anxiety and PTSD. So I think it, excuse me, and that can trigger massive suffering and devastation within a person and a community. And the impact of a trauma can be compounding by physical injuries and loss of loved ones and displacement from one's home. And Andre, in a disaster-stricken region, access to mental health services and other forms of support can be limited, making it very difficult to provide the necessary care to those affected. And they are in real need of that care. So I think it's going to take, it takes time as well with these things.
You mentioned that there are different types of trauma. Let's talk about that. You know, what can be classified as a traumatic event? When do we know that we've gone through a traumatic event?
A traumatic event can be classified as any event that poses as a significant threat to an individual's physical, emotional well-being, and this can include natural disasters such as earthquakes or hurricanes, acts of violence, accidents, or other events that cause significant distress, fear, or a sense of helplessness, or even horror. And trauma can have that long-lasting effect on any individual's mental health and can manifest itself in a variety of ways.
Are there any different stages of trauma?
I think the stages you will find of trauma, typically they include, are very similar to grief actually, and they include that shock and denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and hopefully there's a stage where it's acceptance, which are, as I said, almost identical to grief. And during the shock and denial stage, individuals may feel very numb within themselves, or they may have that feeling of disbelief about what has happened. I mean, I don't know if you can recall the devastation of the world when 9/11 happened. I think a lot of people were in disbelief and shock during that time. And I recall I was sitting in a plane and the air hostess, the cabin crew, had already got news. We were circling in the air to get to land at one of the London airports, but we were just circling and circling and we weren't landing. And people were becoming quite anxious, but cabin crew had already heard of the news, and it just happened to be at exact same time that we were in the plane. And the feeling of disbelief and shock once we landed and we all opened our phones and saw the news was unbelievable. It impacted everyone. And so that disbelief and shock is present. And then there's the anger and bargaining stage, which can involve feelings of frustration and anger about the situation. Well, and again, reflecting on people's reaction and prejudice, the whole nation, and some people were very ignorant in tarnishing everyone as a terrorist that was not of a certain background. You know, it was again that frustration and anger taking play. And then depression can lead to feelings of sadness and hopelessness. And then you know, and this was the time when people sat back and said, okay, so many people have been injured, lost their lives, we've got to now grieve that loss. And eventually individuals may reach a stage of acceptance. Now, the last time I visited New York, I went to Ground Zero, and people, although acceptance is really hard, but there's people like myself who went to visit, and I felt a sense of, I don't know how to describe this emotion, actually. Not quite acceptance. Or maybe it is acceptance. Maybe you can help me out here.
Because maybe a peace, maybe.
Yes. Yeah, peace. Peace. Like, yes, you're right, peace. It probably was a sense of emotional peace. Because I have a lot of family and friends in New York. And during that time, I recall I was so frightened for everyone. And although it can happen anytime, anywhere in the world, and anything can happen anytime, anywhere in the world, but I'm just making this very personal to my experience and my emotions during that time. Because, and from talking to people and looking at how the whole world reacted. So I would say that definitely the stages are very, very similar to grief. And eventually, when people do reach a stage of acceptance where they can begin to move forward, and when it is a disaster, people involved begin to think about how, and very slowly to begin with, they start clearing, say, for example, in Turkey, the devastation that's happened there. They start clearing that devastation. They start considering what is safe. They start to get ideas again, how to develop the infrastructure again, and those things start taking place.
Do you think trauma can be felt very strongly now, recently after the event? The reason why I'm asking this is because you talked about, you know, the infrastructure, trying to build up the cities, isn't it? And from my experience, it's pretty much the fact that you are in the moment, you're still in a fight and flight mode. So you're still, you know, your energy and adrenaline, they're all focused on solving the problem, which is getting people out, cleaning up the streets. So do you think trauma can be felt now, or there is time that needs to pass for all of these things to kind of finish and then they will start actually fully grasping what has happened, what is the effect of what has happened at psychological level?
I think at a psychological level, I think it can still be felt now. It depends. I think from my personal perspective, it all depends on the support that individuals are getting and what they're, especially when they're faced with a traumatic event like what's happened in Turkey, of course. That it's going to take a very long time. There was a devastating loss there. And this can have such impact on their mental and emotional health. And to be honest with you, I don't know whether that kind of access of support is available to them. And creating safe spaces for individuals to talk about their experiences and offering that practical support is a part of the recovery, I think, or a part of helping them get through. You know, this is something I've realized very recently, especially during hearing all this loss and hearing people's stories about the events in Turkey, that you have people that don't need to be told that it's going to be okay. They need practical, hands-on help. They need to see that things are going to start getting better. And it's not a period of time, just like grief. You wouldn't say, oh, over time you're going to get over it so much. You have to get through it. It's that getting through it that's the most difficult, and they've got to see that the government, people around the world are creating, helping them create a safe space for them again and offering that practical support such as food, shelter and medical care, and additionally supporting relationships and friends and family. All of these things come into play and it's a part of the healing process. So from what has been displayed to me on social media and what I followed, I can see a lot of funds and are being raised, a lot of support is being given by the usual organizations, and the one I'm familiar to, Andre, I don't know if you're familiar to it, but the Khalsa Aid, run by the CEO Ravi Singh, I mean, they arrived in Turkey straight away to support them with the operational aid and efforts, as they always do. But again, everybody that wants to get involved to help support, to help people get through these devastating events, they've got to have a risk assessment as well, don't they? And they've got to make sure that there's that, that there's no fear of an impact on the ground of the assessment has to be clear. They have to make sure, I don't know what it's called, the studies of earthquakes. It's seismologists. So what is it?
Seismologists.
I couldn't remember their name. And I'm sure all of these people will have to come into play. Everybody has to feel safe to be able to aid these people, to see them through the devastation, see them through, so they got the mental, not mental so much, but I don't know about the mental support and emotional support, but certainly
psychological.
Definitely for the practical support, because the practical, I think, is the one that impacts the psychological.
Absolutely. And I remember looking at watching on TV all sorts of clips with people being interviewed, and what crossed my mind at that moment was not just, you know, they've gone through a traumatic event, they lost maybe family members or friends or their jobs, but it was just very difficult to watch people being on the streets, you know, families just having a shelter, their car or a carriage. So not being able to have the minimum of comfort after that, because the devastation is so great. But one of the things that I was also thinking about was the northwest of Syria that has been heavily impacted also. So it's not just Turkey, it's also northwest of Syria. And I don't want us to move past that, because I think it's even more important to talk about Syria. Syria has gone through so much devastation, so much war, so much tension. And those people that are affected now by the earthquake, or the same people that have been affected by a 20 years war, and they've been in refugees camp. So how does this work, trauma after trauma after trauma? Where does this lead in the end?
I think it is trauma after trauma. Of course, I think people become extremely numb to these emotions.
Almost resilient, Bellinger, you would think.
I was going to say almost resilient. I'll be honest with you. Not that I've had an opportunity to really work with anyone that's been through trauma after trauma like that. But I recall listening to a case of someone that's been in the media for some time, and the resilience there is, it's almost, there's no choice, you know? Generally, it's an individual starts becoming quite, I think I'll need you to help me out here, because I can't think what the emotion would be quite for such devastation like that.
Look, from my perspective, Belinda, it's almost, as you said, being numb, you know, being almost immune to all of this, because it's they don't know other reality. Their only reality is the trauma and the effects of trauma. And I'm assuming that they almost get used to living like that without any extra reference point. So, you know, so if you've been living in a, let me give you just an example, if you've been living in a village for all your life, you don't know other reality, so you don't dream about greater places. You don't have that imagination. because it has never happened to you. So I'm just imagining, you know, people being born, children being born in this trauma, you know.
I did think about that as well, actually. I wonder if it's normalized, because
yeah,
anything I've actually discussed, and it's a very interesting question that you've brought up. But yeah, the displacement of those people is that loss of life and what they've seen, and the destruction. Those young children being brought up in those communities, they don't know that anything different, do they?
No, and it becomes the norm. It becomes the norm, and I believe it can get to a point where you forget, for example, the parents or the grandparents, they might forget even, you know, how things were before that, because the trauma is so strong, it's so prevalent in their life, has been so prevalent in their life, then, you know, it's almost a defense mechanism. You want to survive. So you're going to build all your, put your, all of your energies into becoming resilient and becoming immune to this type of traumatic event. Dr. Bellinger, let's come back after a short commercial break, and we'll be discussing more about trauma.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
And we're back with Dr. Bellinger. We're discussing the trauma. We're discussing the aftermath of trauma. And our conversation started from the devastating earthquake from Turkey and northwest Syria, and the victims and the support that the victims have been receiving since the event happened. Dr. Bellinger, is there such thing as transfer of trauma? The reason why I'm saying this is because I'm thinking about all these people who maybe have family here in the United Kingdom or all around the world. So they're not, they haven't been physically present in these villages or cities where the earthquake has happened. But they did lose family, and they do empathize with them so much to the level that trauma almost gets transferred. So even though that they haven't felt that physically, they do feel psychologically connected to those friends and families, and they kind of assimilate their trauma. Is it real? Can this actually happen? Is it something that, you know, we have evidence that is happening at psychological level?
Yes, definitely. It does happen, because the transfer of trauma is being recognized in the psychological field for sure. It's known as there's the intergenerational or transgenerational trauma.
Yeah.
It refers to the transmission of trauma from one generation to the next, and it can impact people if people have seen a devastating event or something that's happened that impacts their emotions, and that trauma can be transferred. It can be passed down to children, it can be passed down to passed on to communities, and it can, of course, have that same struggle as the people that are actually going through the trauma, it might not be the physical aspect so much, but the depression and anxiety definitely exists. And trauma can have that significant implication for that mental health and well-being of anyone that's witnessed or the ongoing conflict or the displacement of people. It can impact society, can impact people in different communities. If we bring up the war that was, you know, that's taking place and people that were coming here, refugees, all of this can have an impact on people's livelihoods, their lifestyle. And what it all comes down to essentially is when there is an impact of intergenerational trauma, to provide that appropriate support and resources for individuals and families that are affected by the trauma, and even those people that are affected by watching the news, to take steps and use certain techniques and strategies to help them support their mental and emotional well-being. I think it's important to really promote the healing and the resilience. And one of the most important things is to work as a community together to help support each other when something like that has impacted.
And we have seen this so many times throughout the history, isn't it? The wars we had, even COVID-19, right, which is quite a recent event, and this has led to significant trauma on at various levels, you know, from the people who lost their families due to COVID to people who are still struggling now to deal with the effects of COVID-19, for example. I've heard it on the news on multiple episodes, you know, this type of news from 100 people that were in a building, just 2 survivors, or just a small child that survived under the, you know, pieces of concrete. And what's happening with the survival kit? Because, you know, I imagine if I would be the only person in 100 people to survive any type of devastation, I would seriously feel very guilty for being chosen to leave, and I would feel probably overburdened with responsibility. What am I doing now? I really need to do something that kind of makes up for all the 100 destinies that didn't have the chance to be in my position. So let's talk about survivor's kit. It might be that I'm going, you know, it might very well be my way of seeing things, but I'm pretty much sure that survival kit does exist. So let's talk about that.
Perhaps a survival kit or guide should include practical information on how to prepare for and respond to a traumatic event, and such as a natural disaster. But if someone is, you know, has gone through all of this, I think the tips would be, and they're the only survivor, I think the main thing is to seek that professional help. But this is my question, is it available? And if anything, it would be to practice self-care wherever they can and build a support network of family and friends and learn coping skills. And see, for anyone that's coming back into a safe environment and these things are available to them, you can say, right, these are the steps you can take. You can take the steps of the practice of self-care. You can build a support network. You can learn coping skills. You can avoid triggers. You can set realistic goals, and you could practice, you know, things like gratitude. But then if it's someone who's in a situation where you don't know if those things are available, the only people you really got to turn to is your family, friends and the community. To avoid things and to have a survival guide or kit in the future, then of course then I can say, okay, if something like this has happened and you want to avoid something like that happening again, and you need to, as if we look at the government and the infrastructure and the whole of a community together, then I can say, okay, you've got to include information on how to create emergency kits, develop a communication plan, evacuation system. A survival guide would be including information on how to access mental health services and other forms of support in the aftermath of a traumatic event. And I think these kind of questions are very difficult for people like myself, or even you, Andra, to answer, because it all depends what is available. And for individuals, and seeing what is available to them, from what I've witnessed only on the news and only through social media, I can say I've only witnessed people supporting each other through that community, through those events, through the friendship circles, through the family circles. And the professional help is mainly medical that I've witnessed, and the emergency services. But as far as mental health is concerned, again, I'm not that much aware of what is available apart from what is what's been available here. Sorry, Andra.
No, it's all right. And maybe, you know, that's what we need to do. Maybe we just need to look in into the type of devastation, because that's also important, and also look into, you know, the resources that are on the ground. And you are very right, you know, during war people had to be very creative in creating these resources. Of course now we are in a different place as a society, with a variety of resources, with international support, which is not a small thing at all. But at the end of the day, you do have to look on the ground and see exactly what are the resources available, and kind of start putting a plan together based on that. Tell me, please, Belinda.
I know that in Turkey, because I'm just going by what I see on the news and what I see on social media, and I know they've got the health care system that provides mental health services to the population. But again, mental health services are only provided through the primary healthcare centres. And I think in situations like this, it's all very much hands-on, let's get through the practical sense. And then whether individuals from a cultural aspect turn to that medical, mental, emotional health support, it all depends. And I think they do have a crisis intervention service available through the public and the private healthcare there, and I know it is provided through the mental health crisis, and so I'm sure there's these things in place. But I know that there must be some significant barriers to assess, and all those things that they've got to see what the assessments are of the situation, how it's available, where it's available. I got a feeling that there's still a stigma surrounding the mental health care.
I was going to ask you if there's a...
I'm very hesitant in saying it, but I still feel there is.
Well, it might be because, you know, every culture is different. And I think every country, a culture and country, they're different. And, you know, stigma regarding mental health is everywhere. We have it here in the United Kingdom, maybe less than in other parts of the world, but it's still here. We're still trying to, you know, break some barriers and reach out to people's hearts without feeling ashamed, you know. But Belinda, what I'm quite interested in is in understanding, you know, how the survival kit works. So, for example, if you would have someone in therapy and will come for some counseling with your practice, and they feel terribly guilty because they survived this type of event, whereas their family hasn't. What would be your first step in trying to address this, in trying to, you know, find a common ground with this person and start working towards healing?
I think, first of all, it's grounding techniques. I find grounding techniques are so important, and they can bring their focus and attention back to the present moment of safety. I think that's really important, because we all know how PTSD can impact people. Also, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy and practicing that really does help manage symptoms of the aftermath of events like this, of trauma and anxiety and depression. So that can include meditation and simply paying attention to life as it is now. There will be also the self-care, engaging in self-care activities to help manage symptoms that somebody might be experiencing if they did have PTSD. And this may include look into their healthcare plan and making sure that they're getting sufficient sleep and things like that. Also, I think it's important that the person has the right professional help. They've got the right support network, and they've got the right support network of friends, family, or even a group, or even an emotional support group, as well as professional help and for their mental health, and anyone that can provide counseling. I think it's also important to have a community-based interventions. That's really helpful. There's also intervention and treatment, as well as cognitive behavioral therapy, the eye movement, decentralization, I can't say the word now.
Desensitivization.
And reprocessing, the EMDR. I think it's a Sunday morning thing, I can't...
It might be, but this type of therapy has been proven very efficient. You are right in terms of trauma, isn't it? Because it's from my knowledge, which is not an expert knowledge, but I think it creates the pattern of a more functional type of response. And based then, on, yeah, sorry.
No, go on. Sorry.
No, I said based on revisiting the trauma, but in a very controlled way. So that has proven to be very helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, it is very helpful. So I think those things are available. And another thing that I tend to do when I'm working with patients or clients that need therapy after a trauma like that is, I know this is available to them, but I think it's really important to have a network of people working with a network, a crisis intervention service almost. So you're connected to the GP, you're connected to anyone else that needs to support the person that's been through the trauma. And that means even connected to the rehabilitation services that might be available in the area, and to make sure that that person is getting that support within that community, and making sure that they've got a complete holistic self-care package available for them to support them. I think it's really important to offer that support and safe environment for the individual, and to help them to help contribute to that resilience and recovery. And I think also another thing I suggest people do is journaling, because this helps process their actual emotions. And I have found that it's helped a lot of people that I've worked with.
Absolutely. It is such a, you know, it's a basic tool, but it's so so transformative emotionally, because you put on paper everything that your mind thinks. So kind of you're separating your thoughts from an emotional response, and that's such a beautiful way of looking at how you're feeling in the moment and analyzing your thoughts, not just through this impulsive almost reaction, but through your emotional being. And I'm very glad that you recommended journaling. Dr. Yeah. Bellinger, let's take a short break, and then when we're back, I would like us to just briefly summarize how can we heal from this type of traumatic events, and then we're slowly getting to the end of today's episode. But let's come back after a few moments with Dr. Bellinger Walia.
The station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory, E bar gold.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both Lauren is always Mark. Better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back with Dr. Bellinger. We're discussing trauma and the aftermath of trauma. Today's main topic was the tragedy that has happened in Turkey and Syria, the earthquake. And just to summarize, Dr. Bellinger, how can we heal from this type of trauma? If we are to pick up on 3-4 points that can help us go through trauma, because you taught us how to go through trauma, isn't it? Not just, you know, it's a process, isn't it? So how can we heal from trauma?
I think there's several steps that people can heal from trauma by, first of all, seeking those professionals that can help them. And I think we should all be available for that. And also, a mental health professional can provide that counselling, even medication if need be. Resources need to be available for those symptoms. And the most important thing is to promote recovery. Something that I didn't really discuss, but it's when you have that post-traumatic stress growth, and when you're recovering, you've got to be able to promote this light at the end of the tunnel, and also engaging in those for anyone that's sadly been through trauma, they've got to be able to engage in the self-care activities such as exercise, making sure that they're eating healthy, they're getting sufficient sleep, and to help them manage the symptoms of trauma. And it's important to avoid self-medicating with substances, say, for example, because a lot of people do turn to alcohol or pills without
prescription.
Yes, they do. And so it's really important to be aware that that's not a solution, and that's just going to aggravate the anxiety and depression and not help with a healing process. And developing coping skills, like learning coping skills as relaxation techniques, breathing exercises, as I mentioned, the mindfulness, and manage symptoms of that, they would really help manage symptoms of anxiety and stress. Then counseling and self-help resources, and building a support network with friends, family, or support groups can really help. I know I'm repeating myself here, but these things
do matter, and they're important.
They really do help with the coping mechanism, and engage in therapy. There's trauma focused therapy available. There's the CBT available, cognitive behavioral therapy, that can help individuals identify and challenge those negative thoughts that they and beliefs that they need support in letting go of, and try alternative therapies. There's nothing wrong with trying yoga and meditation. And these things I find really do help symptoms of trauma.
Dr. Bellinger, thank you so much for being on the show today. I do want people to reach out to you, get in touch with you. And I know you have a great website that they can access. So please tell us a bit about your media details.
Thank you, Andrea. Thank you for having me on this show, although it is a very sensitive and difficult conversation to have, isn't it? And I think, as usual, you're amazing. And people can find me on any social media platform and at www.serenelifestyles.com.
Thank you. And I wish you all the best and best of luck with your work and practice.
Thank you. Thank you.
Until next time, may we hear only good things. Let's finish now with a song that, even though addresses another type of trauma, abuse and addiction, still sends the same message. No more drama. Mary J. Blige. Until next time, may we hear only good things.
sometimes.